President Economic Committee of the Senate to order at this time. Today is what day is it?
29th.
Today is April 29th, 1999. I'd like to welcome each one of you today, and especially in the evening. Also, I want to thank each member that we are taking extra effort and time to be here this evening. For the work you are doing today, I'd like to give you a special reward, which means we will not have a Monday. No trade. So that's the trade off. So. Ready? With that, I'd like to open a public hearing, Senate Bill 952. Who do I have at this time? Okay, I'd like to call at this time Jack Elder. And also, would you like to, Mr. Scott Andrews, would you like to come together at the same time?
Sure.
And Scott Andrews is the chairman of Portland, Oregon Sports Authority. Ivan Elder is one of the, is the famous man from our state concerning the matter of Olympic issues in our state. Okay, and who wants to go first?
Please.
Okay, yeah. And this is our procedure, state your name, who you are, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Okay, thank you. My name is Scott Andrews. I am the chair of the Portland, Oregon Sports Authority. Very pleased to be here this evening and excited to be part of the beginning of a process that could lead very well to bringing a major event to Oregon. One that would have a great impact not only on the citizens and ability to see some great athletes, but also give Oregon the recognition that it deserves, as well as create a lot of economic benefit. Let me tell you a little bit about the Portland, Oregon Sports Authority. It was founded 6 years ago, and its mission is simply to bring world-class events to Oregon and create Oregon, put Oregon on the map as a place for premier sporting events. There are about 70 sports authorities in the United States, and it's a very competitive business these days to deal with bringing events of all kinds, all sporting events of all kinds, to any community. So what we actually do is sort of act as a point when there is an organization or a facility that sees an event that they need help with. We bring together the business community, the political community, and the sports organization, and then package a proposal and make presentations to bring events to the state. The biggest one that's coming up this year are the Women's World Cup, which will be here in June, three events. If you see the cities that we competed against, and Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., New York City, San Francisco and Portland, Oregon are hosting the women, and it's going to be an exciting event, and we'll continue, I think, to show that Oregon has the ability to put on certainly world-class soccer events. I think that the Sports Authority is the perfect organization to serve as the organizing point for this effort for a number of reasons. First, as I mentioned, it's a huge event and one that is well worth pursuing. And secondly, without this effort today, without the state beginning this process, we really would have no opportunity at all of bringing the games here. It's a huge endeavor, and the first thing that has to happen is for the state to say we're behind it and we want to look into what it's going to take to bring these games here. This bill sends a clear message that Oregon wants to be a player. Interestingly enough, the Sports Authority last year hosted the United States Olympic Committee annual meeting in Portland. We did on it a couple of years, had it in Portland. It was attended by the entire Olympic Board of Directors and 300 Olympic representatives. We brought them here to introduce them to our fine state, and I can tell you that they had a terrific time, and they would look forward to coming back. We can build on these established relationships, and we not only have relationships through the Olympic Committee, but through some of the sports organizations. For example, this last year, we finished second to a little city called Los Angeles for the year 2002 U.S. Skating Championships. this is the championships where the United States skating team is actually selected for the Olympics. And it comes after the United States championships. It's a huge event, and everybody's interested in it. We came very close to getting it. And I like to say that even though we don't win, we never lose, because when we put our best step forward, and they know that we're real players and we're interested, we're in the hopper. And sooner or later, these events go on every year or every 2 years or every 4 years. And I'm convinced that sooner or later we will get that event, and we'll get a lot of the other events that we're working on. The only suggestion that I had to the bill taking a look at it, we were very interested in coordinating the effort, and we've worked with Jack on other endeavors, is just that a member of the executive committee of the Sports Authority be designated as one of the committee members. The governor could then choose from any of five members, but given that the director would be housed in our office, and I imagine we'd be coordinating the meetings, that direct relationship I think would be very helpful. With that, again, it's an exciting event, and it would be a long road to bring it here, but it starts here tonight.
Okay. Any questions? If not, I also understand from the great Leo, good friend of mine, that the tune that women's soccer game, and I understand also participation from the North Korean women's team, verified. And if it's true, then I'm very excited.
That's correct. That's one of the four teams. Actually, we have the United States playing in a doubleheader on June 6th. And it's the last game prior to the tournament itself. Then we have four teams coming, the 21st and the 22nd. And, of course, I should know them off the top of my head. But Brazil being one of the best teams in the world, and North Korea are two of the attendees. We have sold more tickets than any other venue has. We far surpassed the Soccer Association's expectations, especially for a community of our size. There are over 18,000 tickets that have already been sold to the women's game on June 6th, and I think it's 13,000 for the first of the doubleheaders and 15,000 for the second. So it should be a really exciting event, and it will be televised, and Oregon will be on TV around the entire world.
I firmly believe that there's no barrier in the sport around the world. Especially I remember that when President Nixon opened with China with a ping pong diplomacy. Mm-hmm. And so I think that bringing the even communist country, I think that will bring the taking eyes so we can have a close relationship. And I do appreciate your leadership, and with your leadership, I'm confident that we will continue to prosper in this area. Thank you very much.
Okay,
Mr. Chad Elders, and we're glad to have you again. I think this is the second time or third time.
I believe, Mr. Chairman, it is the second time. We've had one other time informally.
Thank you very much, and I do appreciate you taking time to come out to testify again on this important deal. And what do you have to say?
I just want to reassure you that the language of the bill, as it is written as the Oregon Games Commission, is a broad umbrella.
Okay.
There were some questions that have arisen as to whether or not it would include activities outside of inspecting or looking or going after the Olympic Games only. As it's written, it says the Olympic Games Commission, which would be summer and winter Olympic Games. Within the Olympic family, which is a funny language, is included the Pan American Games. And the Pan American Games in this hemisphere. Obviously, we couldn't host the European Games Southeast Asian Games, which there are a series of games that are held throughout the world. Nor could we go after the Commonwealth Games because we're not a member of the Commonwealth. But we can go after the Pan American Games, and we could do it with the language in this bill. Also, there are many organizations that are within the Olympic family that would be included that are sports that are not included in the Olympic Games. For instance, Currently, rugby is not on the Olympic competition schedule. It was. In fact, the United States is the representing gold medalist from 1924, but they're not included currently. But rugby is included in the Olympic family. So therefore, we could bid for rugby events. We could, look at their competitions and try to bring them here, and it would all fall within the same language and the same bill. So I just wanted to reassure you that the bill is certainly adequate at a very minimum to be able to achieve those efforts. Included in that would be National Congress of State Games, the YMCAs of America, the National Collegiate Athletic Association. They're all members of the United States Olympic Committee. So therefore, it casts a very large net. And I want to again encourage this committee and also the full Senate to pass this, because it's not going to be a short trip. As I stated before, probably the next time the Winter Olympic Games will return to the United States will be the year 2022. The Summer Olympic Games, probably 2016 to 2026 would be my guess, somewhere in there. So that's only the first step. And in all likelihood, they won't get it that time, so it will be even longer. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. By that time, 2030, I might be 100 years old.
Indeed.
Okay. Let me see. Mr. Andrew, Jack, Andrew. And you mentioned the one member that is recommendable to include in this Olympic Games Commission. So far, according to this bill, we have how many members? We have 7 members, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah, 7. Then it should be that the odd number. So if it's going to be 8, then it should be a 9, I think, instead of 8. And so what how many from the private sector?
3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that you currently have now, as amended, there would be 3 members from the private sector.
Well, that could be reduced.
It could be one of those 3, okay. Certainly.
Okay.
It would, that person would fit that bill. They're all from the
Okay. Do you think that we can have a conceptual amendment at
the
time?
I'm talking of the city. Yes,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Already. Is there any other? Thank you very much. Any questions from the panel?
I don't.
Yes. Okay.
Sure.
Sure.
Mr. Albert, you and I had a conversation earlier when you thought perhaps the name would be broader if it were Olympic Sports Commission.
Well, actually, I've thought about that since then.
Right.
And I really think that the name of the Olympic Games Commission is more appropriate.
All right.
In that it has better legs,
mm-hmm.
more public appeal to it. If you say the Olympic Sports Commission, then you automatically have many people who just don't listen. If you say the Olympic Games Commission, people go, oh, we're interested in the Olympic Games. So I would encourage you to keep it at the Olympic Games Commission.
And you don't think it's restrictive?
No, I do not think it's restrictive.
Okay. Any questions from the panel? No. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there any other person like to testify on Senate Bill 952? If not, we'll close the public hearing. And I'm going to I'm open work session, and it's in 9:52. So how do I make the conceptual turn to that? Can you give us a language?
We'll just run it over the house and let them do it, and they have time to draw that amendment by the time it got over there, and that's not a controversial thing.
No.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have to do a conceptual and fool around with it.
Thank you. So,
we go through the...
Pass it as it is.
Okay.
The amendment as it is.
Okay.
And work with the House Committee on the amendment.
Pass it as it is.
As it is. With the amendment.
With the amendment.
With the amendment.
So without spending extra time there.
No, pass the dash one amendment.
Okay.
And the House can make the change that Mr. Andrews recommended.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, are you ready to move the dash one amendment?
I think so. Is there a dash one amendment?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, yes. Yeah. We are ready.
All right, Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 952.
Senator Bordley moves the -1 amendment to the Senate Bill 952. Any objection? Then it's adopted. Yes, we are.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 952 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bordley moves Senate Bill 952 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Let's now call the roll.
Senator Cochran?
Aye.
Senator Bonham?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 952 has amended. It's passed. And any volunteers to carry the bill? If not,
I'll probably be the only one around by the time we get it, Mr. Chair, given my young age. Maybe you should have me carry it.
Are you sure? I'm young at heart.
Maybe I should carry it since I have no conflict of interest.
Yeah. All right, Senator Duncan it is.
Okay, so.
Senator Duncan, that'd be great.
I don't care. Either way, I don't care.
But I make sure. If no one, then I will.
Just chair.
Yeah, okay. I think I will carry them. I will have the honor to carry them.
I think it's great.
All of you can help me giving a tremendous.
You can give a plug for North Korea playing in the soccer game.
I guess so. Okay. Did I do that already?
Yeah.
Okay. What do I do?
Oh.
Okay, yes. I close Senate Bill 952. And so I will close the work session. Okay, we are moving along pretty good. And I think it might be appropriate to make a small amendment at the House side for the one more edition. And I will also talk to them. Thank you very much. Okay, what's the next one? I'd like to open a public hearing for Senate Bill 404. And let me see. May I have here Don
Schellenberg,
the Farm Bureau, and then Mike McCarver, Shannon County.
My
request? Yes, please. Yes. Yes, I didn't have the name, so I didn't. Okay, Don.
Thank you.
You know all the procedure, so I don't have to tell
you. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. One of the things that I've learned over the past almost 19 years now that I've been working at this particular position with Farm Bureau is you got to learn to be flexible.
Okay.
And having come here this evening, our concern that we were concerned about dealt with the local committees and the fact that they may become bureaucratic as the language is being deleted regarding the 51% from the private sector. I have since seen the amendment, which I hadn't seen when the testimony was written that you have there in front of you, written testimony. I've looked at the amendments, and I think they're quite a significant improvement in the language that the bill had. And so I'll just conclude by saying that we weren't opposing the bill, but just like to encourage your adoption of these amendments to the bill. I think they improve it.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, which one are you referring to?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Senator Fisher, on the -2 amendment, page 6, lines 2 through 5, where it says, sets forth that the local board shall represent various local interests and a significant representation from the private economic sector.
Okay.
Section 5 of the bill.
Okay.
And section 5 of the original bill.
Okay. I want to make sure I was batting on all cylinders.
Many amendments. hard to keep up.
Chatting on all
Mike.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, my name is Mike McCarthy. I'm speaking to you today as the president of the Sherman County Wheat Growers League and also a member of the Farm Bureau. And I just wanted you to know that the Oregon Wheat League Association has adopted a resolution in support of regional economic development, and I think this bill, as amended, meets the criteria that the Wheat League growers were looking for.
Thank you. So you support the amendment?
I do.
Thank you.
Now, I'd like to introduce my associate here, Harold Hogan from James.
This is Harold Hogan, yes, Commissioner Harold Hogan, the chairman, members of the committee. Mike just sort of recruited me here just a few minutes ago. I've been a county commissioner in Josephine County now for about 17 years, which is really quite a feat down in that area. But I think what I want to do is to recommend the amendments and to point out from the standpoint of a local government, we've been in the regional economic development business for almost all the years that I've been involved as a county commissioner in both Jackson and Josephine County. And as we appoint our boards down there, we really work very hard and make sure that our majority of our boards are local business people. They're the ones that get the feel of the community, and they're the best ones to be making the decision. We are a part of it, but we are not the majority of it. And I believe that that's historic throughout the state, is that we in the local government level really rely very heavily on our local business community, the Farm Bureau, and many of the issues. And I'm glad to see this language, even though I know it's already being practiced, but it's very worthwhile.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions? Come up?
No. Appreciate them coming this far, too.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Appreciate it. Is there any other person like to testify on Senate Bill 402-404? If not, then we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 404. And open a work session on 404.
I move the dash two amendments, Mr. Chair.
And so Duncan moves the dash two amendments. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair, I just want a head nod from OEDD that this doesn't conflict with the bill that we just did. Great. They're nodding.
Okay. I just want to thank you again for working with the responsible party and making this deal. It's palatable. I appreciate that. Okay. Did I offer that? Yes.
Yeah.
This, okay. Then four, if you think today I hear hearing non-objection, that the draft to amendment is up.
I move, Mr. Chair, I move 404 as amended to the floor with a new pass recommendation.
Senator Duncan moves Senate Bill 404 as amended to the floor with the two press recommendations. Any discussions? Okay. If not, call the roll.
Aye.
The Senate Bill 404 as amended is passed. Any volunteers to carry this bill? Okay, Senator Godley will have a bill. He doesn't have any before that.
Mm-hmm.
No? Okay, and it's closed. The work session finished in 404. And I just want to double check. The one we just passed, the Olympic thing, if it goes to the floor, or does it have a reporter? I'll double check.
Yes, it
goes to the floor. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing in Senate Bill 1313. Is there any person who would like to testify on Senate Bill 1313? Okay, since I don't hear any, I'm going to close a public hearing in Senate Bill 1313, and we're going to put this bill into the kit at this point. It's not dead, but I say it's a fear. Okay. Next one. I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1221. Then, question here, let me just find that one.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just want to do an update on the bill and ask the...
Okay.
Trying to see if I have anything other than the... we have the
okay.
Did we ever do anything other than sexual?
Yes, last time we had a hearing on this.
Oh.
We had that amendment.
Okay.
Why don't you give us that the what is that 1221 does? If there is any amendment, give us what amendment.
Last, yes, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, at the last meeting on the 19th of April, we received a copy of the S1 amendment that Senator Corcoran has requested. And these changed the percentages. Let me begin in the beginning. What this bill does is limit the percentage of compensation that is paid to video lottery game retailers, which is based on the gross revenues that they receive if they sell the game. This bill would reduce the percentage that they are paid, and the amount that is saved from that reduction would then be used for programs that are specifically named in the bill. The Dash 1 amendments provided a different mix of percentages that would be paid to the video retailers as compensation. And
changed the allocation to the interagency.
Changed the allocation from the interagency narcotics.
From state police to the interagency narcotics.
Okay. Now, whether those amendments are the ones that you still wish to consider?
They are.
Oh, they are. All right. Now, this bill does not have a subsequent referral.
That's right. On the advice of...
No subsequent referral.
On the advice
let me see. Who is he here from the lottery?
The
director.
Okay.
Please come on over. David, are you willing to come on? Okay.
Yeah.
AM or PM?
Welcome you again. Thank you for waiting for us. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Chris Lyons. I'm the director of the Oregon Lottery.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Hooper, public affairs manager with the Oregon Lottery.
We don't have any additional comments. I think the last time around we submitted some testimony for you, and so if you have any specific questions, we are just in the back of the room available as a technical resource.
If you could just highlight that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just put it.
Are
you for it or against it? That would be
quite good. Those kinds of...
They're very neutral.
They are. Did you see how they're very neutral? I have it sent here. Just to highlight it for you, we try to give you some background on the current commission rates as compared to other states and other jurisdictions. And I think our message was that what we pay our retailers is, you know, frankly, a little less than what's being paid nationally, but as Senator Corcoran indicated, no two systems are the same, so we really aren't comparing apples and apples. So our testimony basically told you that our retailers make, on average, about $72,000 a year. About 32% of our net receipts go to those retailers, and many states pay their retailers a little higher commission rate than that. I also told you that we, as the state, make the highest rate of return. That is 56% of the net proceeds actually go to the state of Oregon. So it was to give you a sense of where these commission rates currently rest. We also told you that we did a study and actually lowered the commission rates about 2 years ago, and that the advice that we have from our legal counsel is that the current contracts that we have with retailers, which don't expire for about another 5 years, those contracts are not eligible for these lower rates. At least that's our view, because the Constitution protects that contractual relationship we have with our current retailers. So this bill would affect new retailers coming into the system
and new contracts
for those new retailers coming into the
But a retailer now, in 5 years, you renegotiate the contract, and then they would come under the provisions with that.
I presume so, yeah. That helps to be kind of. I think those were the primary elements. We also suggested that you may want to check with legal counsel in terms of where you are directing some of these proceeds. I wanted to make sure you got that into record so that you were comfortable with the allocation. We also told you that we would have to implement a manual system to get this done by July 1st because of issues with not only Y2K, but we don't do this programming ourselves. Our vendor does it, and where we are in the priority list, that it would be pretty expensive if we did it immediately, and we recommended to you that there be a later implementation date on this law. And we really didn't talk about at the time what that date should be. But July 1st was not possible without us going through an extensive manual process. Essentially, that was the core of our testimony, Mr. Chairman, Senator Duncan.
Where is fully implemented this bill? How much is this amount?
We, I think we estimated, what were those numbers? We gave you some...
$30 million from biennial.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, when we worked up these numbers, it was again on the premise that it would be affecting all retailers, but it, because the Constitution says no law impairing the obligation of contract shall be passed, this can only apply to new ones. Again, we have about 100 new retailers a year, and then other businesses who may be subject to sale of business, change of ownership, could also fall under this, unless the retailers get particularly clever about simply adding new. So we would be looking in a biennium, this upcoming biennium, probably 200 at a minimum, maybe 400 retailers that would be impacted by these new rates.
Out of about
1,800, Senator Corcoran, I believe your amendments say 30%, 10%. Is that correct?
35 and 30 for the second, but just to 300,000 instead of 400,000 and 10 thereafter, and that got us to, had it been just a straight switch over, that would have represented 30 million.
So you could,
frankly, I don't know how to gauge how each one of these retailers would do, whether they would fall over that limit, whether they'd be under it. Frankly, I would call it speculation on my part to try to venture a number at this time.
So when it's implemented in July 1st, it is very difficult to translate manually all of those things together?
Well, we would if this went into effect July 1st, then as we, as retailers, a couple hundred of retailers sort of came on board during that year, for a good part of the year would probably calculate their compensation manually, but it would be one by one. So you'd have a new retailer that qualified for that lower compensation rate. The computers would not automatically calculate the compensation for that retailer. We would need to do that manually. And we estimate that by the end of the year, maybe 200 retailers would be under the lower compensation program, and then another 200, and then over time, all of the retailers would be paid this lower compensation rate, either through attrition or when we adopted a new contract with retailers 5 years down the road.
But again, I think it's difficult to forecast what this new retailer sales would be. Would he exceed this threshold and be subject to this greatly reduced second tier that would generate the savings we kind of looking for? Sometimes it takes new businesses a time to get up and running. If they're buying an established one, well, then we would be able to look back. So that's just a model from that.
Mr. Chair, how do the retailers feel about that? We haven't heard it come down.
Mr. Chair, just to give you some comfort level center picture, because I know that's a concern for you, I deliberately crafted this in such a manner that it won't affect anybody that earns less than $100,000 a year in earnings, their own net pay from this. So this was not meant to hurt the little guys at all. We have out of these players, we have about 55% of them that would not be impacted at all, because you have an average of 72,000 per year. So this will not affect the mom and pop. That was I specifically crafted it in such a way that it went after the big money, not the mom and pop.
Well, I feel a little annoyed at changing the formula of the bid stream. It
doesn't change it for anybody.
It's like going to cost them and the American figuring and the individual figuring a bunch of money for at least 5 year period of time. Or they'll have enough of these things to go to the hump to afford to change them. Plus they can get their computers all lined up to handle fear of programs.
Well, sometimes, Senator Pitcher, you have to look at the difference between what we're doing for methamphetamine lab eradication and what that's doing to our kids, what it's doing to innocent children who are victims, and weigh the benefits of, you know, what these guys are making in terms of the golden goose with the lottery and take a hard decision. And, you know, I'm not fooling anybody that there's not going to be some money moved around, but this is $30 million out of a $270 million case, and it won't affect any commercial interest.
Okay. Do you think it will make better if we move the date to sometime 2000? Because it's been 6 months and that the 2000 is coming up, that it might cause a lot of confusion if we have it be an accident if like this.
Well, we have a testimony somewhere here.
What's the vendor projected?
Vendor projected April of 2000 to complete the computer programming. We have not, I think we created some calculation in terms of the cost of switchover and some costs associated with manual preparation. If you want to avoid those costs, in terms of the manual preparation, we should move the date out. It's really...
what is the logical date it could be?
If you wanted to go a total computer-generated method, that is, we would plug in the old retailers at the old rate and the new retailers at the new rate, my best date for you, sir, is April of 2000 to complete that programming.
Okay.
I think we're saying that because we're talking, really not doing anything on our computers until January of 2000. We're freezing, after this release in June, we're really freezing changes, and it will take us a few months to get programming done, get it tested thoroughly, and get it installed. So April of 2000 looks like a reasonable date to me based on Y2K issues.
So I was comfortable in April, or I was thinking at July 1st, but whichever you think is most appropriate.
I would argue that the April date is the date I have. It's really up to you what you want to do.
Mr. Chairman, I think from a point of view of the fiscal year and cycle, the July 1st date would probably be a more natural timeline. Our retailers are used to working on those fiscal years. That would certainly give us time to get the computers up and done. Certainly, it's your call, but I just think in terms of budgeting and everything else.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it would take just there's only one allusion to the implementation of the day, and that's page line 29 of page 1. Let me look and see.
Actually, I think it's the last line.
And line 44.
Of the bill.
Oh, I see. Well,
the line on page 29 refers to the date of allocation each year.
Okay.
The last line on page 2 refers to an emergency and it's taking effect on July 1st.
Okay.
So removing the emergency clause and saying that this act would take effect on whatever date the committee chooses. I think it would satisfy that concern. And then the percentages are listed in the amendment.
Right.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, as I look, I've actually plugged in these numbers now. My best guess is that this would really be impacting about the top 15% of our video retailers, those that would earn over 400. This is really where the change comes from our current.
Over 300.
I'm sorry,
300 they dropped down.
As I read the dash ones, sir, perhaps I'm misreading those. 12 and line 12, delete all of us. Excuse me.
Yeah, just 300,000.
My fault.
No. I know it's hard to read it.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, that's lovely.
Are fraternal organizations captured in that number at all?
If the fraternal organization did sufficient volume to qualify, that is over $300,000 a year in net proceeds, yes.
Do we know if there are any fraternal organizations that would fit that category?
We did not run a computer listing of which retailers would be affected. That is possible to do. We could actually break that out for you, but we have not done that to this point.
I'm prepared to support the bill, but it would be helpful to have that information. There are fraternal organizations that would argue that the dollars they receive go to charitable causes. And so I'd like to have that information.
I hear you. And we would, we don't have it sorted by volume, so we would have to get that information for you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, one question I have, since we, after introduction of this bill, we haven't heard from any retailers at all. And that's one of my concerns. I just want to hear that from the people affected of this bill, I haven't heard any. Maybe they didn't know.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
That's public notice.
I've 12 telephone calls here that came over yesterday and today. I must be on someone's phone tree.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, what I cannot tell you is that perhaps one of these might be one of my constituents, okay. Looking at the phone number exchanges. And and one of the people who called raised the fraternal club issue, which is why I'm raising it here. I have been contacted.
I haven't heard of from anyone on
the phone. Sure. Yeah, I have gotten phone calls from probably the same phone list. I guess I would make a couple of points. One is I think it would be very helpful to get to Bill Mervin. Two is that I would be surprised that there are fraternal organizations making over $100,000 in net proceeds from the machines. I may be totally off base on that. There may be some that get captured in that higher number. It, with regard to the question that, you know, some of their money goes for charity, we could do one of two things. We could either look at the question of does their lottery proceeds, video poker proceeds, go directly to charity? You know, that would be a very important question to ask. Or is it used for fraternal events? And the other question, again, is the utilitarian question of, you know, given a zero-sum budget that we're dealing with here, and given the fact that we have a demonstrated horrible problem with methamphetamines in the state, might it not be more practical to deal with that problem than to deal with the goose laying the golden egg? I mean, that's sort of the fundamental ethical question here.
But yes, will it really be effective for only those people coming new for contract, or are those people who are renewing their contract sometime in the future?
That's correct. Until the current contracts that we have with our current retailers expire, and then when we, and that is 2004, so almost 5 years, and then all of our retailers would be fall under this.
Maybe it was part of my fault. Usually my any deals I have personally, even I call possibly opposing my deal, should I call them to hear from them to make sure we have a fair process. I'm willing to move this deal, but with some reservations, if I haven't heard it from them, maybe if they have some problem, they might be able to address those issues when it works for that house. So make sure no one says we haven't heard any. Of course, they have a duty to follow what where the deal is, but usually, pretty soon they don't have a time, they don't know what's going on unless they have a hired lobbyist in this area. So that was one of my concerns.
Well, there is an organization called the Oregon Restaurant Association, which represents many of these folks, and I don't know if the video lottery organization that was in existence during the time that we did the task force, but they were certainly prevalent there.
They still exist.
They still exist. So there's two organizations here that represent these folks. And, you know, I have been told by the Restaurant Association that they would oppose this bill because it has an impact on their members. But again, I would argue that, I think the largest single entity, and I won't mention their name, but the largest single entity is a truck stop. It's not a restaurant. And I think they're the largest, they have the largest turnover.
Okay. Okay, any other questions? Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Is there any other person like to testify on Senate Bill 2021? Okay. We will close the public hearing. Senate Bill 2021, open a work session, Senate Bill 2021. So we have a...
Yes, we have cash one amendment.
Cash one amendment. And...
I would recommend
mm-hmm.
the following procedure.
Okay.
I would recommend that one of the members move to adopt the Gashlon Amendment, and that is approved by the members. And within a separate motion, one of the members moves a conceptual amendment to remove the emergency clause and state that they actually take effect on the date that you choose, and have that be approved, and then have if that's the only conceptual amendment, I believe that it is.
Okay.
And then move the bill to the floor with the dash one,
okay.
and the concessional amendment separately approved.
Okay. What's
and,
the
and also, in making the second motion, you mentioned that you wish to suspend the rules to adopt the conceptual.
Okay, good. I was just saying we just did that in our last committee, and so it's a conceptual. I didn't suspend the rules. So do we need to adopt the dash amendment first, right?
Yes.
And what the language would be, dash amendment?
Dash one.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one into Senate Bill 12.1.
Okay, so what's the language of the dash one here? Oh, let me see. Already in here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought it's here. Okay. It's here, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Any objections to adopt dash one amendment? The hearing none is adopted. And only one amendment, right? Okay.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move.
And it's a corporate.
I move to suspend the rules to consider a conceptual amendment on page 2, line 44 of the bill, or should say page 2, section 7 of the bill.
Okay, that's too long to remember for me. There's a Cochran move to suspend the rules to...
has to specify what the legislative, what the conceptual amendment is.
I move to suspend the rules for conceptual amendment in section 7 on page 2 of the bill, which would remove the emergency clause and change the effective date to July 1, 2000.
Okay. You heard on the move. And any... Do I need to call the law?
No, no, there's no objection as the conceptual amendment is adopted. You haven't done that.
What?
You didn't...
Oh.
You didn't adopt the conceptual amendment.
Yes, that's why we have a call to adopt the conceptual amendment.
Oh, you want to vote on that?
I think to suspend the rule, I think we have to vote. This is the suspension of the rule.
Is it just take
four. We call the roll.
Thank you.
Before I vote.
Aye.
Senator Fisher? Senator
Gordley?
Aye.
Aye. That we suspend the rule, it's currently for now. And then do we need to adopt the dash amendment now? Or?
Right now, move to score the bill with the dash one and
I want to make sure that would be asked that you suspend the rule at the same time you move that the conceptual amendment. Could we do it combined together or what do we need to adopt?
Why don't I just make it so it's both, it's covered both ways?
I guess we better make sure.
Chair, I move that we adopt a conceptual amendment removing the emergency clause in section 7 of page 2 of the bill and declaring that the act take effect July 1, year 2000.
Okay. That's long to remember for me, so we are heard. And, let me see. Let's see. Any objections to adopt? It's adopted. Okay, I guess now we are ready to go.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1221 is adopted as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
I think the Cochran move Senate Bill 21 to the floor as amended. Senate 21. Thank you. As amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Okay, and any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would just like to recall for the record the testimony that we received from Mayor Mike Swain, who is a board member of the League of Oregon Cities and also co-chair of LOC At-Risk Youth Special Committee. And in his written testimony, and if you would allow me just to share some of what he shared with us, and this is what persuades me to vote for this bill. He said that, however, due to the passage of ballot measures 5, 47, and 50, the jurisdictions closest to the issue, our cities and counties have been placed in a condition of significant fiscal constraint. At the local level, in an effort to preserve fire and police services, municipalities are having to severely cut back recreational, library, and social programs, many of which directly affect youth and their behavior. Thus, while the need to fund strategies to keep youth out of trouble and to teach them what it means to be good citizens is mounting, the resources to accomplish this important function are rapidly being depleted. Senate Bill 1221 would be a strong statement to the effect that this state and each of its communities are unwilling to set ever more youth adrift during these critical hours when they are not in school. It would represent a commitment which would clearly say that youth are a priority in making our communities, both present and future, strong once again. That comment really resonated with me when he made it, and I just wanted to put it back on the record.
Well, once I get that, only to confirm I might have before we vote on this issue, this bill affects the revenue and also appropriation. And we will send to the floor, but it might have some discussion. And so we need to speak for that. Whether instead of the voting, whether we are going to discuss that in the question for the way to name who are living. So even I wouldn't be surprised when the floor, discuss of this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be happy to get a something from Legislative Council, because we had this discussion at length with them about both the revenue side and the appropriation side, and it was their contention that because we're simply changing a formula of distribution of lottery proceeds, that it requires neither referral. But I'm happy to address that on the floor.
And one other thing, since this might not affect directly this coming by any, maybe to some degree, and so that that might be another discussion point.
Yes, I'd be happy if they'd use general fund money, Mr. Chair, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, I think we will hear it, right?
Yeah, call the roll.
Senator Corcoran?
Aye.
Senator Duncan?
Aye.
Senator Fisher? Senator Gordon?
Aye.
Senator Brown?
Aye. Senate Bill 21 passed, and I'm sure Senator Corcoran would like to carry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. I appreciate it. With that, we'll close our work session with Senate Bill 1221. Okay, what's the next one?
Senate Bill 949.
Senate, I'd like to open a public hearing, Senate Bill 949. Ready? Let me see, what's this one? I'm already playing.
Are you ready?
Okay.
I'm ready to move it to the floor.
Okay. Would you like to come and
yeah.
Bill goes in.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, you're
there. You will proceed to please to state your name.
Bill Rothstein, a citizen.
Yeah.
And first of all, I'd like to thank you, Senator, for that help.
Thank you.
And I'm in the semiconductor consulting business, and I've been working for 6 years with a Korean company, and the person I've been working with is Dr. John Lim.
Thank you.
Concern was that I thought that the lottery should return the unclaimed funds to the people, because when somebody bought a ticket, they expected there to be a winner. And 14 states in the United States have money returned to the prize pool, and all those states have a minor or marginal increase in sales because of it. That's not the reason. My concern was that I believe that it wasn't right that somebody would buy a ticket and that if there was a winner, then the money would, if they didn't claim it, would go to the state instead of back to the people who bought an interest in that lottery ticket. And I think the best example would be the state of the state of Iowa, who says when odds and prize amounts are published, the state has a moral duty to give away the prizes that are promised. I think that was my concern.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? You are the gentleman who requested to introduce the bill.
Yes.
I think I neglected the name of the request of. Would you do that, okay?
Perhaps
on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Asking for unanimous consent.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
I'll make a note of that.
Yes, could you give me your exact name
mm-hmm.
and send the whole thing, make sure we can get it? We just want to be right.
F. William.
F.
focusing, R-O-T-Z-I-E-N.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I note that when the lottery is signed up, I'm just curious. The money right now, what happens to the money?
Yes, we are looking for it. Oh, could you come on over?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Chris Lyons, Director of the Oregon Lottery. Senator Duncan, the law currently requires that unclaimed prizes go back to the Economic Development Fund, so that money goes into the transfers and is used along with our earnings, the rest of our earnings, to fund school programs, the jobs, and other economic development programs. So the law requires that we return those, we transfer those unclaimed prizes back to the citizens, so and allocate that money.
Sure. Question. Does any of that go into the addiction fund?
The way it's currently structured, the problem gambling money really comes out of the general fund, although there's I'm assuming some backfilling with using lottery revenues. The piece of legislation that you passed out of committee earlier would have a 1% of lottery proceeds being used for problem gambling. So at this point, technically no.
They'd like to come on over.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Hooper. Lottery funds are currently being used for problem gambling. The allocation for the 97-99 biennium of lottery funds for problem gambling treatment was $4 million. Some additional general fund monies were used to increase that funding level during the biennium. That was issued by the emergency board, but the unclaimed prizes would be, as the director said, part of the total that we transfer to the state and would be part of the total that would be subject to the 1% from the Senate Bill 118 that the committee passed.
Yes.
Well,
information I got from the lottery, from the National Council of Legislators from gaming states, is that the 14 states that returned the money had a noticeable increase in sales, so it might offset the money anyway. It's just a principally idea that somebody had bought a lottery ticket and there's no limit.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I guess I don't understand something. Because I haven't been thinking about this for a minute, but I'm just trying to think why the next person should benefit because somebody else just didn't claim it. I mean, so I win the next one. I mean, I put my money in, that was the amount of money available. I'm just curious why I should benefit because of...
You're buying a lottery ticket for a prize, and you say it's megabucks, but it keeps going up. And then finally that prize was won, but nobody's paid. You would seem like you would have an interest in that lottery that it should go back to the players. And like the ethics of it, that somebody's... Anyway, that they're not getting the benefit of that prize that they bought an interest in.
Well, let me say, I guess one of the problems I have is that, I mean, I realize the prize is important to the winner out there, but I would be dead opposed to the lottery tomorrow. I would vote to do away with it completely if there were no, you know, I hate to say, but we do rely on the lottery nowadays. I mean, I look at the addiction programs, I look at education, I look at economic development, and that's the only reason we're in the business. So I have to admit, I don't care much about the winner, maybe I'm just careless on that sort of thing. Because
well,
I haven't won, maybe.
I really appreciate you calling.
No, I don't even try. I don't.
But for all the of thousands of people playing the lottery. It's a big, that's why I'm here, because lots of people came to me and they said, people wanted to do something other, because they were concerned that when they hear the lottery went unclaimed, and I believe the lottery had told me it was like $5 million last year to find them.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I wanted to make it clear that currently the governor's budget that is here in these halls has $1 million
built into
it for projected unclaimed prizes, approximately $4 million a year. So as you think about this policy issue, you would need to think about that question.
Mr. Chairman, I would add to that that the Oregon Lottery does pay about $650 million a year in prizes, so the $4 million unclaimed is actually less than 1% of all the prizes that we do award. And anybody that presents a valid winning ticket will be paid. These are the prizes in which nobody comes forward to claim them.
This is a new practice actually paying off.
Well, if I vote against this and buy another ticket and I win, I'm going to test myself with this. But I went the wrong way and didn't benefit from it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duncan, you have a year in which to claim that prize.
Senator, in order to win, you have to buy a ticket.
Oh, yeah. I thought there's a special deal.
Can we answer your question?
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. And Mr. Rothstein, yes. Did you say Portland State returning the unclaimed money to the people?
Yes. And states like Texas and Kansas and Iowa are seeing. And they also show a 1% or greater increase in lottery sales because of the
improvement. Okay. Okay. Any other questions? No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there any other person like to testify on Senate Bill? I think it's 949, right? 949.
Raise your hands on.
What? Oh, play the game?
Yeah, they're playing the Lakers tonight, Mr. Chair. Not the first of the our hearing tonight. Second half
probably. Okay, I'd like to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 949. And, I'd like to consult the vice chair.
I'm
not going to have a work session on this bill at this point. I don't think I have enough support to pass this bill. So,
Chair?
Yeah.
May I just comment? Sure. I mean, I appreciate Mr. I'm saying it wrong. Bringing it to attention because it's something I hadn't thought of. It just, I haven't even had a chance to conceptualize what you say about the other 14 states. I spent time with the president. That's why I was like, me to spend time with the president of the Senate, just looking at legislative figures. And I'm every million really counts right at the moment. And I guess I'm not prepared to vote for something that's going to change the budget at this particular point. And it may be a very rational idea. I just don't know. But I think it's sketchy and that's kind of off guard. So that's one of the reasons I wouldn't be able to support it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I may add to Senator Duncan's comments, I think it's very important that the issue has been brought forward. It certainly deserves discussion. And thank you very much. It's reasonable for us to be having the discussion. However, I am very concerned when I look at the staff measure summary and note that annually $4 million is transferred from unclaimed lottery prizes to the Department of Administrative Services for the Economic Development Fund. And that's my concern, that this would be a direct hit on that fund. We are the Trade and Economic Development Committee with no idea of where the replacement dollar would come from. And so with that in mind, and I would be unable to support the measure as it is currently presented, because there is no replacement revenue.
Yeah, that's true. And speaking as a Democrat, unlike good Senator Duncan, who's actually got to see a budget, it's already the end of April, and we haven't seen a budget in this damn building. So it would be very hard for me to give up any cash.
Okay. Well, I think that's said it. And with that, should I close public hearing? Okay. But I do appreciate the effort at this point, and thank you for driving all the way down to 6-5. Sometimes we will, sometimes we lose. I guess that's a part of the process here.
Mr. Chair, and maybe, you know, with most things, it's a good little working system. Something doesn't happen in the first session, though. I hadn't thought of it. I had never thought of it before. So
I want to say, dear Mr. Dead, only it's going to slip for a while. I don't know how long.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, and I'd like to open public hearing Senate Bill 115. This bill has been heard many times before. Give us the update and what's the amendment, Senate?
The most recent amendments are Johara Supes, Member.
Okay.
Your summary. Refers to amendments with no number. They are the dash 4 amendments, if that has not been entered.
Okay.
This bill...
are we looking at dash 4 amendments?
We are looking at the dash 4 amendments.
Okay.
And this bill has to do with the minor decoy act by or programs by OLCC, with which you are all very familiar by this time. Last meeting, you looked at dash 2 amendments. And I pointed out to each of you the differences between that and an earlier amendment on the Uniform Minor Decoy Operation Bill. Since that time, OLCC, and we have worked out some changes to the Dash 4 amendments, and I have indicated that for your information on the SMS by the effective media amendments, the numbers that are written in italics are the sessions that are new from the amendments today. And perhaps OSF would like to come forward and help us explain what the amendments do.
Okay, and we have James Miller and Barbara Hutchinson. I think like we are meeting regularly nowadays.
Very regularly.
I hope this
will be the last meeting of this sort.
Your last may be a beginning of a good relationship.
I'm going to ask Barbara a quick question.
Yes, of course.
Go into this. Cut into the bottom line. Are you guys for these amendments or against them?
I'll go on the record. Barb Hutchinson with the Liquor Commission. Carol Reese and I met this afternoon. I've talked with our administrator. I have met with the law enforcement agencies, the sheriff, the chief, and the League of Oregon Cities, and the Dash 4 amendments, as they are currently written, are acceptable to all parties.
That's good enough for me.
I would like to, and Senator Gordley let me know, you know, one of the things when we left the other day was there was a request by Senator Gordley to kind of go through the decoy standards and the standard operating procedures and what the program looked like. And James Miller is here and very willing to do that. If you would like to continue with that, that would be great. There are a couple of things as in terms of the Dash 4 amendments that I would like to say. There's really only two changes, I think, that Carol and I made today with the help of legal counsel Dave Hendricks. And one is in sub 5, section 2, page 2, that basically talks about the law enforcement agencies of the state shall give prior notification to the Liquor Commission so that we will know when they are conducting a sting operation. And we would also, that gives us an opportunity to track what's going on statewide so that if the legislature at some point would like a progress report, we will be able to provide that. Under Section 3, I know Chairman Lim was concerned about a licensee who maybe was getting two full fines, one by the city and then another one by the Liquor Commission. And with the help of counsel, we were able to craft some language so that if a licensee is caught in a sting by a local law enforcement agency and has to pay a fine to the city of, let's say, $600, and in our sanction schedule, they would have to pay $1,900, they would only have to pay the difference so that they wouldn't pay two full fines. And that's perfectly acceptable. I did talk with our Assistant Attorney General this afternoon, and she wanted to be sure that on the record as it relates to double jeopardy, that the law clearly allows the imposition of administrative in addition to criminal sanctions. And she just wanted to be sure that there was no misconception that those two things were perfectly legal under the law. Right now, I would like to thank this committee, and particularly Senator Lim, for taking the time to look at our programs and taking such an interest in this program, the Minor Decoy Program, is relatively new. I think the committee, through its thoughtful questions and listening to what seems like hours of testimony, has really helped us craft a program that will work better for communities and work better, hopefully, in keeping alcohol out of the hands of minors.
Yes, we
do support for this as it's written.
Okay. Since you mentioned it, I just want to thank you. Senator Gordley has been a top chair during the last interim, and she was mainly responsible to bring this bill up to this point, and also for each member. I appreciate that.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, James, would you like to share any thought you have in mind at this point? Last words?
Yes. For the record, my name is James Miller. I'm the manager of the statewide compliance team with the Liquor Commission, and I'm charged with the duties of operating the decoy program statewide. You have a packet that was handed out. In that packet, you'll find a number of things. Probably some of the most important things to you are the policies and procedures that was signed by our administrator and put into effect in April of 1997. In addition to that, you should have the in-service training agenda, which are the items that we go over with every decoy that we use prior to using a decoy. And also, you should find in there a listing of the program standards for our decoy program. And if you'd like, I can go over each one of those. If maybe you have specific questions you'd like to ask us, you could do that.
Having requested the information, I can tell you that I don't require you going through all this information point by point. Definitely appreciate you bringing it in this form. I wanted to see the policies and procedures. You have them here. You've got the temporary rule. I do have a question about the in-service training agenda. When was this developed? The actual outline that we're looking at now.
The actual outline I wrote about 2 nights ago on my home computer. However, I want to tell you that these are the things that we have, in fact, been doing, but it was never formally put into this kind of an outline.
And that's the point. That has been one of the questions that we had as a committee. This is a process that does need to be formalized, and that's what you're moving toward. I think we all appreciate that this minor decoy program is evolving, but we wanted some assurances. I wanted some assurances that the actual training program is written down someplace, that you're working from a script. And so I appreciate that you put this together over the last 2 nights, and I also am going to gather that this is going to evolve as well. And at some point, we may be looking at a different form of this this program.
And if I may, Senator Gordley, to tell you that we do have, there is a outline, but it is not broken down specifically and succinctly as this is.
Okay.
All these points that you see in this outline are covered each and every time, and they have been since we started our decoy operation. But I thought this was clear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't have to redundant again. Exactly, Senator Gordley, the vice chair of the committee on the nation, the high points. I hope you continue to develop the program, make sure the when you operate the minor decoy program, let them have the copy, what are the guidelines, to make sure they understand and we understand the procedure so they do in a proper manner.
Yeah.
I do appreciate the job you are doing. After the decoy operation coming into our state, we improved quite a bit, and we need to continue on that program, make sure that the takeaway and the violence, and also the licensee employee, they've been more careful with this program. Okay, so Malcolm, you want to say something?
No, they're ready to vote on it.
Can I ask?
Yes.
I have two things I'd like to add for the members before you vote. First of all, I did receive a note from Lynn McNamara with the League of Oregon Cities. Just before the meeting, she couldn't stay, so she did want me to make sure that meeting you that the League is supportive of the DASHOR amendments to Senate Bill 115, as Barbara has already mentioned, and with her thanks to the committee for working toward this goal. And the second thing is one point on the amendments that Barbara forgot to mention. It's an addition, something different you haven't seen before. It's described in number 7 on your designated summary. This is the point that has been a concern to the OLCC that the young people they use in their minor decoy operations may be susceptible to a criminal prosecution. And they've been working, I understand, under agreement with various district attorneys in the counties where they use minor decoys, and perhaps by letters of agreement. But this allows them to be comfortable and confident that the young people who volunteer in this program won't be prosecuted for their activities. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Carol, basically, we have been working under an opinion from the Attorney General's office, the authority, and this will apply to any young person working either with the OLCC or with any local or state law enforcement agency.
And that we give them a safe guard, make sure they do according to the rules and statutes. Okay, with that, did I? I'd like to, no, is there any person like to testify on this Senate Bill 111? Sign of old age. Senate Bill 115. If not, we will close our public hearing. Senate Bill 115, and I just want to thank you again that you're working with us. We sincerely appreciate it. Okay, I'd like to open our work session, Senate Bill 115.
Move adoption of Senate Bill, move the Dash 4 amendments.
Yes, Senator Duncan, move Senate Bill 1, the Dash 4 amendment. Dash 4 amendment, right?
Yes, sir.
Any objection? If not, adopted.
Mr. Chair, move Senate Bill 115 as amended to the floor with the DUPAS recommendation.
Senator Gordley, move Senate Bill 115 as amended to the floor with the DUPAS recommendation. The discussion.
Mr. Chair, I've never played the lottery, but I was ready to play 115 just to see. I'm glad that we're finally moving this forward, and I would just like to thank Barb Hutchinson again. There she is. Thank you. Really appreciate all of your hard work. I know it's been frustrating along the way, but you hung in there. Okay?
We all did. And, okay, let's call the roll.
Okay,
enough of this love test. Hi.
I'm going to vote for it. Yes, I, because Senator Clifton voted for it.
Aye.
Aye.
Senate Bill 115, as amended, it's passed. I guess this financially goes to the Senator Gourley, I guess. And I think I will be giving a supporting speech.
Great,
let's
go
straight.
Every day we get rid of somebody, that's fair.
And I'd like to close our work. What do we have?
Yes, please. Is that our story?
13
and 7. What's 13 and 7? 13 and 7 is a very bad bill, Mr. Chair. It probably should go away. It's a great bill with a big constitutional problem.
Okay, I'd like to open a public hearing and put a table. 407. Is there anything like to testify on this deal? Okay. Come on over. I wasn't sure about that.
Everybody already is.
Okay.
Got a good thing going, right?
The Washington Pacific Northwest Grain and Seed Association. I'd like to welcome you, and thank you very much for waiting up to this point. I was wondering that you've been waiting until the last minute. I thought you had a reporter.
Senator Lim, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jonathan Schleter. I'm the Executive Vice President of Pacific Northwest Grain and Feed Association, which is a regional nonprofit trade association headquartered in Portland. We represent the commercial grain handlers of wheat, barley, corn, hay grains of all descriptions that channel here and are produced in Oregon, but funnel here from 13 western states for export from the lower Columbia River and the Columbia River District. Those include 7 grain exporting terminals. In deference to the hour and the interest of this committee on this particular issue, this is testimony that I wrote in preparation for Monday's hearing. Conflicting schedule didn't allow me to testify before your hearing on Monday. There's more there than you ever want to know about grain exporting or grain shipping, and I will just commend it to the record. Reiterate the testimony that you've already received from groups like your Negroes League and some of the ports along the Columbia River, and remind the committee that grain accounts for 70% of all the export volume out of the Columbia River District. As such, we have a distinct interest in anything that that refers to the prosperity and efficiencies of the lower Columbia River Channel. And establishing a superporter, even the consideration of a superport at Astoria, holds no promise or potential for the grain industry. Simply stated, we've been there and we've tried that. There is a photo attached to the testimony there of the facility that sat at Astoria for 50 years under a revolving door of ownership and operators. Early in this century, the facility was finally torn down by the Port of Astoria in about 1987. After failing to make a buck for any of its owners or operators during that time. Grain simply doesn't work. It's a bridge too far or a port too far for our use. The rail line simply can't extend there, and we can't transit that port in efficiently or economically. Simply stated, we are very interested in the Columbia River Channel deepening project. We see a proposed study for a superport creation at Astoria as a conflict to that channel deepening project, and as such, we must oppose the bill. And if there are any questions, I will certainly be happy to answer them otherwise.
Any questions? What happened that I think I asked before, that the ship's getting bigger, and we are trying to deepening channel 43 feet, and then it might require 45 or 50 feet. I will continue to deepening the channel, that I'm sure that a lot of groups will that the great opposition at the same time. Of course, Astoria might be available sometime in the future for the the big ships when they couldn't come into the Columbia River.
Senators and members of the committee two thoughts or considerations on that. There is a point of diminishing return upon the Columbia River Channel that has been apparently set at 43. That dredges to 45 or 50 or 80 reaches a point of diminishing return, too much cost, and environmental impact, simply having to dredge out a channel 100 miles from the I-5 bridge out to the mouth of the Columbia. This wouldn't work. If we need deep draft access like that, we have the ports of Seattle or Tacoma to the north of us, where we also have export terminals and rail access into those locations. Those are unlimited draft berths in Tacoma and Seattle.
Okay, you're from the Washington State?
No, Washington County. Sir.
Washington County.
Kind of cheap to ask us to identify the county of residence.
Okay. So my concern that we need to keep the economy going in our state.
Of course.
We don't want to lose to Washington or California. And, you know, so the, what the deal does to study any possibility in the future in Astoria area, feasibility study. And accidents regarding the language that the, you know, kind of this thing is there has nothing to do with the deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, my original intention was not anything to do with the, kind of transition. I support the transition.
I appreciate it.
You know, that has been my position since I was elected. Still do, and I will continue to do so.
And we thank you for that.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much for waiting so long. I do appreciate it. Okay. You see any other person like to testify on Senate 1307? If not, we will close up the hearing. And I'd like to open a public hearing Senate Bill 1242. Is there any person like to set by on Senate Bill 1242?
I'd like to see everybody go.
I thought you were coming to
a
retired police officer here that know a lot of this stuff. You don't trust the legislators, right?
You just started to work here about a week ago. You haven't got to testify on anything yet.
This is really insulting.
Okay.
Super chance. Yeah, no, you do this just for us.
And go home.
Raises is probably in second
order. Since I don't hear anyone, I'd like to close up public hearing Senate Bill 1242. What
would you like me to discuss the bill?
Yeah.
All right.
To give us what the bill does.
Are we doing a work session?
No. It's closed to us very fast.
All right. This bill has already been before the committee once. Senator Perioli came and discussed the Sacagawea monument that's in progress and that he would like to allocate funds for us, but at that time he had no resource for the funds and was hoping to be able to come before the committee at a later time with the artists and with more information. Apparently that hasn't worked, but he did indicate to the office that he would like to see the bill passed out. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. So it could be passed out without filling in the blank.
Okay.
And leave that responsibility to Ways and Means.
Okay. Could we do that without filling in the blank space?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. So that's the choice.
And what that does is signal to the Ways and Means either you didn't care how much money was going to be contributed or allocated, or you didn't have enough information.
Okay.
To put in an amount, and it would be
or dependent. 12 after 8. Didn't want any further explanation.
And
I'd like to move 1242.
And the game was playing.
Okay. But, yeah.
Can I borrow your gun for a minute?
Yes.
My only problem is piecemealing the lottery. I mean, it's the same problem I have with the initiative dealing with the lottery. It should be a management tool, and I don't know. It's a matter of principle here. I'm all for this. In fact, I'm a monument. I just don't know if that's a
prudent thing to do.
Are we actually responsible in this deal? That's what the question I imagine. We are just spending to wait and meet, you know, and seeing if that's the attitude we have. What
I wouldn't mind sending to wait and meet without recommendation.
Okay.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
That way they can deal with the policy question of whether we should be using.
Senator Perry always makes a decision about whether to
okay.
money together.
Okay, I'd like to open our office and send it at 1242.
Is that okay? How do you feel about it?
Chair, move 1242 ways and means without recommendation.
Okay, sir. The Cochrane move Senate Bill 1242 through the ways and means without recommendation. Any discussion?
A memorial to Sacagawea is long overdue.
Yes. Oh, I agree.
Okay. More discussion? Then please call the roll.
Aye.
Hi.
Hi.
Senate Bill 1242 moved to ways and means without recommendation is passed. And anything else? Any other business? I think we did pretty good, and I'm going to reward each member that we have Monday free of TNE.
No meeting.
Sure, no meeting.
Okay.
And a meeting on